The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Oh, Jimi Hendrix, nothing like that to get you rocking and rolling on a Friday morning at 6 o'clock. I mean, we've been rocking and rolling for an hour already. Jimmy Sangenberger in for Peter Boyles, but we're not really rocking and rolling until we hear somebody like a Jimi Hendrix or a Stevie Ray Vaughan to get you going in the morning. So good to be with you here on Good Old News Talk 710 KNUS. Happy Thanksgiving, one and all. I hope you had a wonderful time. It is going to be a high of 65 today. My goodness, a low of 30. And mostly sunny on this beautiful Friday. Right now, it's not so sunny. It looks a little dark out still. But before we know it, it will be sunny, and it will be one of those nice, beautiful days. We've got a guest in this segment, but if you want to join into the festivities coming up afterwards, 303-696-1971 is our telephone number to do just that. So on Wednesday, I had my weekly column for Colorado Politics go out entitled Strained Hospitals Blame Government. We are now seeing new mask mandates for kids as young as 2 or 3 in all public indoor settings. Everybody above that age in a growing number of counties in the Denver metro area. And this segment is not about the mask mandates. I may get into that coming up a little later. But it's about the fallout of COVID-19 policies of government. They saw this virus spreading. They made decisions. Whether they were elected officials like Jared Polis, governor of Colorado, or unelected bureaucrats like Tri-County Health Department. And among those decisions were to basically say we're not going to allow patients to come to the hospitals that do not have COVID. Elective procedures were forbidden or seriously restricted or discouraged, depending on the kinds of procedures. Government said you can't do this. Well, then hospitals were like, well, if we can't do these procedures, we don't need all these staff here because we're mostly just COVID wards. So we are going to let our supportive staff, our clerical folks, nursing assistants go because those were jobs that just handled paperwork and basic patient bedroom checks and so forth. And for the time being, they're not necessary. So they say, you're going. Well, then now we're at a point where only about 20% on average across the state of hospital beds are held by COVID patients or patients suspected to have COVID or with COVID. And yet we see capacity craze. What in the world? Huh? Oh, you mean that thing that is a result of government policies last year? Yes, it is a result of government, what we are seeing right now in our hospitals. But there are so many other fallout pieces, so many other consequences, harms that have come from government policies of COVID-19 here in Colorado. And there are also opportunities. Some people were winners. There's a brand new report that just came out from the Independence Institute last month entitled Unequal Opportunities, Unequal Outcomes, the COVID-19 Recession in Colorado, authored principally by Senior Fellow of Fiscal Policy at the Independence Institute, Dr. Paul Prentice, economist extraordinaire. And he joins me now to talk a bit about that report. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Jimmy.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, same to you and same to your listeners.
Did you have a good one yesterday?
beautiful. Had some family down and just really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
A lot of leftovers.
Oh, aren't those the best?
Yeah. In fact, as soon as I finish this segment of the show, morning coffee and leftover pie.
Ooh. Oh, that's absolutely perfect. You can't get better than that. So I was just setting things up a little bit based on my column about strain hospitals being a result of government. To me, that's just one of many examples of government chaos because they decided, the all-knowing, all-powerful government, Dr. Paul Prentice, decided this was the route, which is lockdowns and restrictions on our lives that we needed to take.
You know, the problem with a lot of government policy is failure to think through the secondary and tertiary consequences. Mm-hmm. And making certainly obviously one size fits all will not fit a diverse population. But beyond that, just not thinking things through in terms of how the economy works and what they're actually doing. And with the hospital case that you mentioned, I think people in charge of things, or people who think they're in charge, they're not supposed to be running us, they're supposed to be representing us. But they think that the economy consists of a number of switches and gears and levers that you can just pull and turn on and turn off and start again, as we're finding out with the current nursing or a hospital problem. You can't just do that, and the damage to the economy last year from the lockdown was immense. And we did a very in-depth report for the Independence Institute with a lot of research. Everything is cited, and we were shocked at what we found, Jimmy. We did not expect to find the degree of damage and the focused concentration of that damage among poor and minority populations. It was just unbelievable.
One of the impacts that you talk about is how small businesses decline in this state by more than 40% from pre-pandemic levels by June 2021. 40% decline in small businesses?
Huge, isn't it? Didn't see too many large businesses go out though, did you?
Yeah, that's an important distinction, honestly. So explain that one. How do you get a dichotomy where large businesses seem to be doing okay? In fact, in the tech spaces you talk about, they do particularly well versus small businesses, many of which have crumbled.
Well, that was targeted government policy. If you remember, for example, the large box stores were deemed essential, but your mom and pop store in the corner was not. Mm-hmm. Of course, it was very essential to the mom and pop, but not essential to some of our ruling class.
Yeah, that's the thing, too, when you look at the types of stores. So a lot of the cases, those were big box stores you're making a distinction to. But so many of these big companies are in the tech space where they're literally set up for opportunities for remote working and so forth. I mean, there's a dichotomy between businesses that could actually operate amidst a remote environment versus those that could not, too.
Yeah, absolutely. People who actually do physical things, work for a living, that was where a lot of the damage was concentrated, because many people work in what's called the intellectual economy or the gig economy, and that was not harmed as much, for sure. In fact, a lot of it actually increased their wealth.
So when it comes to the income dichotomy, or that is the gap between the rich and the poor, so to speak, that one was definitely exacerbated. You talk a little bit about the income spectrum and the racial lines where minority communities were particularly set aside as well. Talk to us about the socioeconomic and racial elements to the fallout.
Sure. At the depth of the COVID, I don't call it anymore the COVID recession in Colorado. It was the government policy recession, because keep in mind, some states didn't lock down at all, and they did pretty well. In fact, some of them did just fine. So to call it a COVID recession would not be accurate. It's a government policy recession. Mm-hmm. But during that time in Colorado, peak to trough, we lost about 450,000 jobs concentrated among lower income and minorities, as well as the 43,000, which is about 40% of the small businesses, which are mostly mom and pops owned by lower income, and people that work in them tend to be lower income and minorities. These are entry level jobs, service sector jobs, restaurant type jobs. It was brutal. It was absolutely brutal.
These are, we need to put this into perspective for a moment too, Dr. Paul Prentice. These are lives, not just livelihoods, but lives and dreams that had been eradicated because the government said, we're not allowing you to do what your business is supposed to do. We're not allowing you to live out your American dream. Instead, we're going to say you have to shut down your business, and maybe we'll provide you some support to try to keep you afloat.
You know, you're right, Jimmy. A lot of people in the, I'm going to just flat out call them this from now on, the ruling class, the ruling political class of both parties, by the way. A lot of people there seem to think that the economy consists of machine-like numbers, and they don't realize behind every one of those 450,000 job losses is a person whose life and livelihood was shattered. Behind those 43,000 small businesses lost, there's a person with a dream and a hope and invested their livelihood. We found one a minority couple who had 3 years before the pandemic just opened their first outlet of a store they had, and had done so well that they expanded into a second store, and they had 35 employees, mostly low-income minorities, entry-level type jobs, and they lost everything. They had mortgaged their house, so that they lived in an apartment, and that's how they raised the capital to expand their business to the second outlet, and then all of a sudden, with a stroke of the governor's pen, it's gone. It's just something. And this is a beautiful couple who have a special needs child, and this was their dream. They employed family members and community members in their businesses, and that story is repeated, Jimmy, over 40,000 times throughout the economy in small business, and then 450,000 times with the unemployed. I mean, I was shocked, I was just shocked at the depth and the concentration of the damage.
Again, we're talking with Dr. Paul Prentice, Senior Fellow in Fiscal Policy at the Independence Institute, author of the report, Unequal Opportunities, Unequal Outcomes, the COVID-19 Recession in Colorado. Tying into this, they didn't just shut down businesses, they shut down schools. And we have seen the fallout of school closures to forced remote learning. This year, I mean, you talk to teachers and they're just beside themselves at how children are not focused, they're not behaving in the classroom, and their learning gaps have grown tremendously in the most heartbreaking of ways, especially when you look at it along socioeconomic lines and at students of color, which you talk a little bit about that in the report as well.
Sure. We looked at many different levels of this impact that has affected the Colorado population, and one of them was educational outcomes. And the data is not as strong as we would like, only because the sample was very small for the 2021 data. But compared to pre-pandemic levels, when we look at student achievement scores in 2021 compared to 2019, what happened was the very wealthiest school districts lost 1, 2, or maybe at most 3 percentage points off of their proficiency scores. So a bit of a drop. But my gosh, Jimmy, in the poorest school districts, that's both in the Pikes Peak region as well as up in the Denver area, the poorest school districts, those students lost anywhere from 15 to 20% percentage points in their proficiency scores, and I'm talking both math and English skills, and that kind of setback is going to stay with us for generations, I believe.
What's so stunning is we hear the folks who believe that government should step in, that it is a duty and an obligation to direct our lives when the circumstance or situation calls for it, that they think the all-knowing, all-powerful government can make decisions about our lives amidst a crazy, chaotic situation that was totally unexpected. They think they can do it. Well, They act like they want to do a lot of these policies to help the poorest among us, to help racial minorities, to help ethnic groups, to help immigrants, so on and so forth. And yet the policies that they have put in place, Dr. Paul Prentice, for the last nearly 2 years, I mean, we can go much further back than that for broader policies, but let's stick to COVID, have made people worse off in those lower income demographics and people of color. And the list goes on.
Absolutely. The data that we found was so shocking that it's easy to say something like this. I know it was not the intent of the lockdown,
right,
but if the intent of the lockdown was to harm lower income and minority people, they couldn't have done a better job.
Yeah,
I mean, if it was purposeful, it's just quite amazing. I encourage everybody to go to the Independence Institute website and download the report. It's full of a lot of geeky kind of economic information and socioeconomic information, but at least read the introduction and the key findings and the conclusion at the end. It's really, really something.
Think freedom.
And you know what, Jane?
Yep. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. I'd just like to quote one of my favorite economists, Milton Friedman, who once said, "There is nothing wrong in the world that's less government wouldn't make better."
Yes.
So there's that. And then also from the Austrian school, just thinking about what the sense of human action behind all these choices and decisions that people make. That's the economy. The economy is us.
Yeah.
It's not a machine. It's people.
That's
and as
critical.
You say, it's their hopes and dreams. Hopes and dreams. It's in a sense, it's their freedom, at least in a free market economy, or what we used to have, a free market economy.
Well, let me just jump into that. And by the way, thinkfreedom.org is where you can go for the Independence Institute's website and to get access to this report if you're interested. But when we think about government and we think about the idea of government stepping in and helping people, that sounds really nice on the surface. You think, okay, the economy is sort of like a machine. That people think this way, at least. Incorrect, but they do. It's like a machine. Let's go ahead and do X, Y, and Z, whether it's the Federal Reserve or it's Congress or it's the President of the United States or it's the state legislature or it's the governor or it's the unelected bureaucrats. And then everything will be able to fix itself when the time comes to reverse those policies or to loosen things back up. And the problem is that, as you say, an economy is a collection of individuals. It's not some anaphorous thing, some entity that can be molded by whomever decides to do whatever with the power that they're given in government. And the consequences that can come, you mentioned earlier about the secondary and tertiary effects of government decisions, you need to start thinking about those in the beginning, right at the outset. So if we look ahead at a possible future pandemic, relative to that, what lessons do you think we can take away that policymakers should keep in mind at that point in time?
The first thing, your listeners know this quite well, the Constitution nowhere says that these Bill of Rights are suspended during times of pandemic. You know, it's unbelievable what's happened. And kudos to the few states and the few businesses that defied the lockdowns and stayed open. And the churches as well, the few that did. I'm pretty disgusted with a lot of our church community that just bent over and accepted the government's dictate. So I've lost my train of thought already. It's too early in the morning. You'll have to repeat the question.
Well, I was looking ahead for lessons for the future.
Okay. I think we found some data that might help. We found that state by state, there's zero statistical correlation between the stringency of the lockdown and masking orders and the health outcomes of the population. There was none. It's as if a policy was designed that had all these costs that we uncovered and very little, if any, perhaps a zero actual health benefit. And we see that comparing states within the U.S., and now there's a study out, peer-reviewed study out, comparing nations. And you look at countries like Sweden that never did any of this nonsense, and their infection rates and death rates are actually much lower and countries that are in the middle of vax mandates and still going back into lockdowns. So I think the lesson we can take away from it is take your hands out of our pockets and leave us alone. In other words, the proper role of government is to protect our pre-existing creator-endowed rights. It's not to do things for us. Mm-hmm. So maybe that goes back to your segment from before the 6 o'clock hour, where you were talking about the founders.
Yeah.
You know, their idea was the role of government was simply to protect our pre-existing rights. Mm-hmm. It was not to do stuff for us, because if it wants to do stuff for us, it has to do things to us.
Right. I want to ask you one final question from a macroeconomic viewpoint for the country, Dr. Paul Prentice, not just Colorado. And that is what we're seeing right now with the rising cost of living, Bidenflation, if you will. We've seen so many, going back to the lockdowns, especially supply chain disruptions. My friend John Tamney makes the point that it's not so much that we're seeing inflation in the traditional sense in many ways. It is that you're seeing price rises because supply chains were shut down by the force of government that got in the way and said, hey, we know that you've been cultivating these relationships for years, for decades with other businesses across the globe, but we're going to shut things down. And then when they decide to reopen and allow the progression of economic activity to reboot, those supply chains are already disrupted, and those issues are not going away, and now we find ourselves in a malaise. What's your take on what we're seeing right now with the rise in prices and the difficulty with getting things delivered and so forth because of supply chain issues that continue?
Sure, the supply chain issue is huge, and it goes back to our previous discussion that the economy is not a machine with switches you turn off and turn on. Many of those chains took years or even decades to build, and think of all the people and processes involved in that. But actually, I disagree with Tamney. The supply chain is causing individual prices of things that were affected to rise, but you cannot have an inflation in the economy, an overall rise in the total price level, unless you have sufficient money to pay for all of those things. And so I look at it, it is a monetary phenomenon. It's an absolutely dangerous monetary inflation combined with a supply chain disruption.
Very interesting. Dr. Paul Prentice, we're out of time here. I do encourage folks to check out your report, Unequal Opportunities, Unequal Outcomes, at thinkfreedom.org, the Independence Institute's website. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. Really appreciate your time, and happy Thanksgiving to you.
Hey, same to you, and thank you so much, Jimmy.
Go enjoy that leftover pie, brother. All right. I could use a little bit of pie right about now. We're going to take a quick break. I'm Jimmy Sengenberger in for Peter Boyles. Keep it right here. It's News Talk 710 KNUS. Rocking and rolling back. Jimmy Sengenberger in for Peter Boyles this morning on the day after Thanksgiving. Such a pleasure and a privilege to be with you. Thanks so much for being a part of the program. Of course, I host the Jimmy Sengenberger Show every Saturday morning now, right here on News Talk 710 KNUS from 6 to 9. Among my guests tomorrow will be Congresswoman Kat Chemack of Florida. She is actually a Colorado native and now represents Florida's 3rd Congressional District. It's kind of funny, too. She and Lauren Boebert are both good friends in Congress. And Kat Chemack was a Colorado native and Lauren Boebert a Florida native. Lauren Boebert now represents Colorado's 3rd Congressional District. Kat Chemack now represents Florida's 3rd Congressional District. There's some kind of fun swap there, and because I'm easily amused, I find it incredibly amusing. Anyway, Kat Chemack will join me tomorrow to give her thoughts on the so-called reconciliation bill, all the social spending. She calls it Build Back Broke, and was on the floor of the House and got chastised a little bit for saying she was voting hell no on Build Back Broke. She's one of those fighters in Congress. I'm looking forward to talking with Kat Chemack, Congresswoman from Florida, at just after 8 o'clock tomorrow morning on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show. Coming up the top of this hour, Gordon G. Chang will join us to break down what's happening, the latest in China. There are so many different things going on that are deeply concerning. Who better to talk about it with than Gordon G. Chang? And coming up at 8 o'clock, my friend Keith Nobles will join us to break down several topics, including Facebook jail for memes that are just making historical points. He's not somebody who you would think would get blocked from Facebook for 4 days. But alas, that is exactly what happened. Talk to him about that. He's a former contractor to the intelligence community, and we are going military intelligence community. And we are going to talk a little bit about China and some other topics with Keith as well. So lots coming up. If you want to join into the festivities, 303-696-1971 is our telephone number to do just that. All right. We were talking a little bit about inflation, or Bidenflation, that we're seeing all across the country, so much so that the media cannot deny it. They might want to shy away from it, but they're not. Here is a CNN report talking about what's happening at Dollar Tree. Folks, the dollar store is no longer going to charge you just a dollar for products. Not only that, but companies like General Mills, I think it is, have announced price increases that will be coming up before we know it. Take a listen to this on CNN.
It's this new environment. Call it dollar and a quarter tree, right? Dollar Tree will raise prices to $1.25 on most of its products, and you can expect to see that early next year. It's another sign of the pressure low-cost retailers face amid the fastest inflation in 30 years. Inflation at the Dollar Tree, at the dollar stores, and at the breakfast table, John. CNN has learned General Mills notified its customers it's raising prices mid-January. Hundreds of items. Cheerios, Yoplait, Fruit Roll-Ups, Betty Crocker, Pillsbury, all of those could rise by as much as 20%. Your grocery bill is rising as the economy is recovering from the pandemic shutdowns of a year ago. There are supply shortages, higher transportation costs, there are labor strains. Prices in October were more than 5% higher than the same time last year, thanks to those higher costs for the commodities, the labor, the shipping. Some of America's biggest chains, though, are using their market muscle to manage through here. Buying power and locked-in contracts give them leverage to demand first priority from vendors and from their cargo shippers. We know Walmart, Target, and Home Depot have chartered their own ships to different ports to bypass bottlenecks, and they are stockpiling goods. Walmart, Target, and Home Depot combined have $10 billion in goods on the shelves. Walmart and Target say they are raising prices more slowly than competitors. They're betting that helps them keep the budget-conscious shoppers coming to them. You probably noticed something called shrinkflation, too, John, right? Maybe you had a big jumbo supply of, you know, 40 rolls of toilet paper. It's now 38. You can see some packages are getting a little bit smaller, so they don't have to raise the prices. But after basically our lifetimes of no meaningful inflation, inflation is here, and this is how you see it, John.
After basically our whole lifetimes of no meaningful inflation, inflation is here, and you see it, John. That's CNN. And honestly, it literally, for me, I'm 31. It literally is my entire life. If you go to October, just last month, a measure of inflation, the principal measure, was the highest it had ever been in my lifetime. Literally since 1990. That is shocking. But not surprising given all the different economic issues that we've seen. But we're talking about the fastest inflation in 30 years. Big chains. This was an interesting tidbit here. Walmart and Target have chartered their own ships and sent them to specific ports so they don't have to worry as much about the supply chain issues. They are stockpiling on goods. Those big businesses have the ability to do it. We don't have too many mom and pop grocery stores and so forth, but they exist, and they do not have that kind of buying power. They cannot do what Walmart and Target or Kroger are able to do. And so, again, we see small businesses set back, and it goes to what Dr. Paul Prentice at the Independence Institute and I were just talking about in terms of government doing things with the best of intentions for the most part. And I think that's an important point to raise, because I don't think most people who were involved in shutting down the economy or taking these steps actually did so thinking, you know what, I want to hurt people. No, I think they said, this is the course of action we think we must do. It is hubris that brought about the economic malaise that we're seeing right now. I remember interviewing Dr. John Douglas, executive director of the Tri-County Health Department, in the spring of 2020, last year, early on, amidst the lockdowns. And I remember asking him about the, what my dad calls the Ben Franklin analysis. You could just say the cost-benefit analysis. It was abundantly clear to me back then, as it is today, that he has not done that. Tri-County Health hasn't done it. None of our unelected bureaucrats or elected officials have done a cost-benefit analysis to actually see what the harm could be or was as a result of their policies. If you are literally going to shut down the economy, force kids out of schools, the list goes on, you should actually compare the perceived benefit to all of the costs and consequences of what you're going to do. Indeed, it really is a government-created crisis and recession that we have been enduring. Prentice is absolutely right about that. And I talked a little bit about my column from Wednesday in Colorado Politics, Strained Hospitals Blame Government. And I make the abundant point that the hospital crisis that we are seeing right now, the capacity crisis, is a consequence of government. Government said, we are only allowing, for the most part, hospitals to be opened as far as procedures are concerned for things that are absolutely necessary. Nothing elective as determined by government. So then the hospitals say, you know what, we have too many staff members doing things that are intended to do things that we can't do right now, so we're going to let them go. And then when we get to this point in time, where we have a need for our hospital workers for so many things, because only about 20% of beds in hospitals in Colorado are occupied by COVID patients. Only about 20%, the rest of the so-called capacity crisis, is due to non-COVID patients. Yet there aren't enough staff, and they're firing staff who don't comply with vaccine mandates. Hundreds have been fired. Many have quit. And it's all because of what government started last year and how it's built up. Now, okay, I will say there have been points where when we've had such a flood of COVID patients, for sure that provides a real significant stress point for the frontline workers and for hospital workers. I'm not discounting that at all. That was true. Can remain true depending on the area of the state. But on the whole, it is because government said, we're not going to allow this, and then all the consequences fall from it. Time and again, I wrote on Wednesday, government makes things worse, not better. The forced moratorium on elective procedures last year is a prime example. Government caused the hospital bed capacity crisis. Mask mandates won't help. They merely deflect blame from government onto the rest of us. And yet our all-knowing, all-powerful overlords, the public officials, they just don't care about criticism. Take this little clip of Dr. Fauci on MSNBC.
Well, Ari, I'm not in it for a popularity contest. I've devoted my entire professional career of 50 years to try and essentially safeguard and preserve the health and the lives of the American people. And as an infectious disease doctor who deals with outbreak, that gets really extended to the rest of the world. That's what I do. The praise or the arrows and slings are really irrelevant. I do what science drives you to do, and that's what I do. And, you know, I'm not in it for a popularity contest. I'm trying to save lives. And the people who weaponize lies are killing people. So the only question I have is that when you show Tucker Carlson and Peter Navarro criticizing me, I consider that a badge of honor.
A badge of honor. Now, there are some unfair criticism that gets leveled towards Dr. Fauci, I would say. But what he just did there and what he does constantly is just brush it off as though, what do they know? They're just critics spewing misinformation, disinformation. They're attackers. They're not genuine actors. He never actually takes constructive criticism. I heard Hugh Hewitt do a great job grilling him in a respectful way. And Fauci just doesn't care. And he doesn't have to care. Because I think he's the highest paid federal employee. He's got a nice cushy job. And he is idolized by so many people. And he's in government. Combine all those things together. And it is an absolute recipe for hubris that doesn't give a damn about criticism, even the most justified criticism and critiques. I'm Jimmy Sangenberger, filling in for Peter Boyles. 303-696-1971 is our telephone number. We're going to take a quick break. More on this. Jen Psaki just doesn't get it. She's Biden's press secretary. And how tone deaf can you be? Keep it right here. News Talk 710 KNUS. Good morning, Jimmy Sangenberger in for Peter Boyles here on News Talk 710 KNUS. Great to be with you today. Talking a little bit about the economic malaise that we're facing, and you cannot have that discussion without also putting out a little bit of the tone deafness from the Biden administration. Here is White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki excusing the rise in prices of a Thanksgiving dinner, including a dollar more for turkey.
I don't know if you've cooked a turkey before, but a 20-pound turkey is a pretty big turkey. I think we can all agree. They're about $1 more. So not to minimize that, any increase in prices is something the president is concerned about, as is evidenced by his announcement today and as his efforts to push forward on additional relief for the American people. But I just want to be clear that there are abundance of turkeys available. They're about $1 more for a 20-pound bird, which is a huge bird if you're feeding a very big family. And that's something that, again, we've been working to make sure people have more money in their pockets to address it as the economy is turning back on.
I don't know if you've ever cooked a turkey, but a 20-pound turkey is a big turkey, and it's only a dollar more. Here's the point that she doesn't get or is trying to ignore, because I'm sure she actually understands it. A dollar more for a turkey, that's only one part of a Thanksgiving dinner or one thing you're buying amidst the holidays. A dollar more for a turkey, a dollar more for stuffing, a dollar more for gravy, a dollar, you know, or I'm just hypothetically throwing it out. Whatever it is, it all adds up. Then you talk about the Christmas gifts. I remember a media report saying that televisions were costing like $50 more than they were. All of that, especially if you were on tight income stream or fixed income, or maybe a spouse lost a job or had to leave their job because of what's going on with kids in schools, or the list goes on because of government, government, government. Again, theme of this hour. Last hour was don't tear down the statues of founding fathers. They're a lot more complex than you're giving them credit for. They've contributed a lot more to this country than you are acknowledging or willing to acknowledge. This hour is government screws things up when it tries to make it better or tries to keep you afloat or address a crisis, especially when it comes to economics. And then they don't understand or are unwilling to acknowledge the implications of what they're doing. Let's go to gas prices. This happened several weeks ago. Energy Secretary Granholm was laughing, literally laughing, when asked about the Granholm plan for addressing the rise in gas prices.
What is the Granholm plan to increase oil production in America?
Oh, my God. That is hilarious. Would that I had the magic wand on this, as you know.
Now she's taken a much different tune.
And while our
Energy Information Agency, and that's underneath the DOE, it predicts that we are going to turn the corner in 2022. The fact is right now that energy prices at the pump and at home are too high. This administration realizes that people are seeing this every single day as they go to work, as they fill their cars with gas. And we also recognize who's hurt the most from this. Low-income families already spend up to 30% of...
I think she got the memo.
Somebody got a talking to.
I think that she, Kelly, recognized when somebody came to her and said, wait a second, you probably shouldn't laugh that off. She said, oh, we're going to get serious on this. We're actually going to take it seriously. Let's go ahead and release 50 million barrels of oil right now from the Strategic Oil Reserve. And I was reading that about 18 million of those barrels will actually go specifically to other countries. India.
Really?
For example. Yeah, I'll pull up the article here. I got such a stack of stuff in front of me. But 18 billion going to other countries. And then on top of that, you have the fact that about 18. Well, actually, take a listen to this.
There are various figures about this. So I'm curious if you know how many barrels of oil does the U.S. consume per day?
I don't have that number in front of me. Sorry.
So some suggest it's about 18 million, which would suggest you're releasing less than 3 days worth of supply from the petroleum reserve.
Now, that's just the 50 million barrels total only gets a few. And if it's 18 million barrels that are going to other countries like India, then that leaves 32 million barrels, which at 18 million or so, that gets you just over 2 days worth of oil. And that's supposedly going to help the oil crisis. You know, she may be talking like it's more serious, Granholm. But gas price Granholm isn't actually taking it seriously in the administration, because she's also, I don't have a clip here, but I'm going to talk more about this tomorrow on my show. She's also poo-pooing the rise in gas prices relative to the Biden administration, actually saying like, oh, it's not us, it's the oil industry. And it simply is the case that it's all up to OPEC, and oil industry isn't producing as much as it should, and not taking any sort of blame for what the Biden administration is doing in restricting the growth in production and so forth, various policies. And Biden himself saying, literally saying, it is not due to our policies on climate change that we're seeing gas prices go up. It's unfathomable lunacy, quite frankly, that we are seeing all the more in the case of the Biden administration vis-a-vis energy. And, okay, here we go. Fox Business. The White House said the Department of Energy will release 50 million barrels of oil held in U.S. reserves, 18 million of which have already been congressionally approved for sale. China and India have been actively purchasing U.S. sour crude oil produced in the Gulf of Mexico, first reported Bloomberg. Sour crude oil contains high levels of sulfur, which reportedly makes it more expensive to process and traditionally turns buyers away. But U.S. produced sour oil crude appeals to foreign buyers because of its relatively affordable price tag, the publication said. The White House's Tuesday announcement means the U.S. will seek to accelerate sales abroad in an attempt to counter spiking prices at the gas pump. The additional 32 million barrels will be intended for U.S. consumers to alleviate increased demand. There you go. From Fox Business, 18 million barrels, not just India, to China also. Let that one sink in for you, especially as we're about to talk with Gordon G. Chang at the top of the next hour about China and what they've been doing of late. I'm Jimmy Sangenberger, filling in for Peter Boyles. We've got two more hours up ahead. This is going to be a really interesting discussion. Gordon Chang always has some fascinating perspective to lend on China. So we'll get to that and so much more as we continue. Keep it right here. Two more hours to go on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.